Castaway Podcast, episode 1, and it's November the 11th, 2005. Welcome all to this, the first real episode of Castaway. I wouldn't really count the introduction or test recording as an episode, so we'll call this episode 1, just to make it easy. Also, a big welcome to anyone who's listening to us through Blind Cool Tech, and a big hello to Larry. Keep up the great program, really enjoying it. Today, what we're going to do is cook dinner. Probably doesn't sound particularly exciting, but what I'm hoping to try and do is to talk a little bit as I'm going about a few of the little tricks and tips that I've picked up over the years, and also some of the little gadgets that I use to make things a little bit easier. There's been a fair bit of talk on the Blind Cool Tech email list, for anyone who subscribes to that, and I imagine most of the people listening probably do, about the ways that people do things. And I want to stress here that there's really no right or wrong way. You do whatever works for you. And where I can, I'm going to try and give a couple of alternatives to things. But really, at the end of the day, you have to find your own way and find what you're comfortable with. And if you're not comfortable with something, don't do it. And if you want to experiment with something, do it when you're not in a hurry. Don't try and something new and different when you've got 10 people coming for dinner in half an hour, because at the end of the day you just get stressed, and it really takes the edge off it a little bit. And what I hope to try and do here is to have a bit of fun as well. Cooking's probably one of my favourite pastimes, and it doesn't have to be a big stress or a big chore, so we'll try and, you know, make it as lighthearted as possible. And hopefully we won't make too much of a mess. But again, if we do, and messes happen when you're cooking, especially when you can't see what you're doing, it's sort of inevitable. It's not a problem, really. Most things can be cleaned up and sorted out. And if dinner turns out to be a complete disaster, we can always dial a pizza. So if the first time you try this, it doesn't work out, don't panic, give it another shot. And if you've got any really good stories about messes that you make, by all means email them in, and we might cover them in a feedback show somewhere down the track. Anyway, let's get started. What we're going to make today is chili con carne. And one of the reasons why I've chosen this is that it's pretty easy, it's very quick, it tastes good, and there's not a lot of chopping involved, which I thought was probably a good one to start with. The only thing that we do need to chop up to get this started is an onion. And I'll spare everybody the stupid jokes about the difference between whatever your most despised profession is and an onion. The answer being, of course, you cry when you chop up an onion. I was going to spare everybody that, didn't I? Oh well, no more, I promise. Now, in terms of chopping up the onion, I'm just using a fairly large serrated knife. I don't tend to use anything else for chopping in the knife department. I don't have sort of anything razor sharp. And I've only probably cut myself chopping, you know, once or twice. I do find I can't do it as quickly as some of the chefs that you see on TV that do these cooking programs, and nor would I want to. Safety always comes first. There is a way, because we're just chopping one vegetable, I'm just going to do this with a knife for quickness, but there is a gadget which you can use, and I do use if I've got a lot of things, if I'm chopping up, you know, a lot of potato and carrots and pumpkin and things like that for a stew, or for mashed vegetables. And that is a manually operated or hand-operated chipper. Basically what it is a, if you imagine a flat plate that has little squares, or it has a vertical plate at each end. One end has little squares cut into it, and the other end has holes that correspond to those squares, and the edges of those holes are sort of slightly sharp. And what you do is you drop your potato on this, on the flat plate, and as you pull the handle down, the plate with the squares on it moves towards the plate with the holes in it, and basically the vegetable gets forced through the holes and cut up into things that are shaped like chips. And that's an easy way to chop things up, much easier than sitting there doing it with a knife. And my wife Sharon's just walked into the room, and our daughter Jade, hello.
Hello, I just came to get a bottle.
Oh. Hello, Jade. Jade's 2 years and 3 months, is that right? Yeah, and it's nearly her bedtime. Past her bedtime. Anyway, as I was saying about the chipper, that is a good, easy way of chopping things up if you've got a lot of things to chop. And it's certainly very quick. You can chop up a whole potato in what, just sort of pulling the handle down once. Whereas with a knife, obviously, it takes a few minutes. You still do have to peel them. And I don't use a sharp knife for that. I tend to use just a standard vegetable peeler. Again, I'm not that comfortable with razor sharp knives that I want to start peeling vegetables with them. I'll talk more about the chipper and demonstrate that next time I cook something. We might do a casserole or a stir fry or something like that next time. Bye. Night night, Jade. Night night. Bye bye. Now, what I've done with the onion here is just more or less cut it in half, and then I'm just cutting those pieces into strips. Fairly rough chopped, doesn't have to be finely chopped or anything artistic, because it all kind of cooks down and mixes in this particular dish anyway. It really just adds a little bit of flavour. And one thing you'll notice about me when I'm cooking is that I put an onion in just about everything. I don't have any neat tricks really to stop the tear factor. Unfortunately, that's just one of the drawbacks of cutting up onions. If anyone's got any great tips on that one, drop us an email, and the address I'll talk about at the end of the program. Okay, so that's our onion chopped up. Now the next thing we need, of course, is a pan. Now, just a quick word on fry pans and using stoves and things like that. If you're comfortable with using a fry pan on the stove or a saucepan on the stove, that's fine. If you're not, there's a couple of alternatives. You can use an electric fry pan, and they tend to work fairly successfully. Or you can use an electric wok. A wok's kind of good if you haven't done a lot of cooking, because they have very high sides, so you're not worried about... oops, oh dear, just knocking everything over here, but that's okay. The wok's good because it has high sides. You're not worried about flicking things out of it as you're cooking and stirring and those sorts of things. And also, because they're a sort of freestanding thing, you're not worried about oil spilling over and going onto the element and that sort of thing. So if you're a bit wary of the stove, there's a couple of options for you. I've been cooking for a number of years, so I'm just going to use the electric stove with a fry pan on it, because that's what I happen to be comfortable with for this dish. It is a fairly deep pan, which is very helpful. I always put the oil in before I heat the pan up just for safety in case anything goes horribly wrong. Now there's a few things you can do here. You can either use the spray-on type oils and just give the bottom of the pan a good spray, or if you're comfortable just using the oil bottle, as I'm doing here, just pour a little bit in and then kind of tip the pan in a number of different directions to make sure that the whole bottom of the pan is covered, and you can do that, you can check that by feel. The other thing you can do if you're not comfortable with just pouring the oil straight out of the bottle, and this is something that I did when I first started because I didn't want to drown things in oil and I didn't trust myself to not pour too much in, is use a little pump spray, the type you find used as a soap dispenser, that sort of thing. I had ones that were actually designed for tomato sauce. They were just a square bottle with a plunger type thing on the top, and I knew that for some dishes I used 20 squirts of oil and for some I used 40, just depending on what it was that I was cooking and how much oil it needed. So that's an option there. But what I've done, as I say, this time is just poured a little bit of oil into the pan and we just tip it up in a few different directions, and we'll put it on the element, get it nice and stable, and just turn the element on. We'll start it off on 5, this particular stove. The knobs sort of go in clicks from 1 to 6. So we'll start it off on 5 and we'll probably back it off to 4 as we go. I'm not going to talk about gas stoves at the moment because we don't have one. I do use one when we go away in our motorhome, and I will be doing some podcasts on cooking with gas and cooking in a camp oven and cooking outdoors and those sorts of things, but we'll save that for another show. We'll give that a minute or so to heat up. I normally, most sighted people would probably let the pan heat up for sort of 5 or 10 minutes before they start putting meat into it. I don't with this dish because we're using mince, and the mince has come out of the freezer and been thawed out. And so sometimes it's helpful to be able to break it up as you're putting it in. And if the pan's really hot, it'll spit at you, and there's always sort of more chance of burning yourself. So I tend not to let it get too hot when I'm first putting the meat and the onion in. We'll put the onion in now, and I've just got it sitting on a chopping board, which we just carry over to the stove and drop it in. There we go, and that should hopefully start to sizzle in a minute or so. Give the chopping board a bit of a rinse off. It always kind of helps if you clean up a little bit as you go. That way your bench tops don't end up too cluttered and things like that. It just sort of increases the potential to have accidents. So we'll wait till we hear the onion start to sizzle before we put anything else in. Now I'm using pork mince for this because Sharon can't eat red meat, but you can use beef mince, and I think probably most people would. You can also use chicken mince, and any of them taste pretty good. With the pork mince and the chicken mince, I tend to add a couple of things, and we'll talk about that as I go. Just to give it a little bit of flavour, because pork mince and chicken mince tends to be a little bit more bland. And the things that we add, you can do with the beef mince as well. It really doesn't matter. I'm not the sort of cook that follows recipes to the absolute letter. I do add some of my own things. And if I haven't got exactly the right things in the cupboard, I do sort of try and improvise a little bit. And I think to some extent that's part of the trick to this, is that if you don't get too hung up on doing things for exactly the right amount of time and those sorts of things, just use it as a rough guide. You'll find things a lot less stressful. Okay, our onion's started to sizzle now, so we'll put the mince in, which we'll get out of the microwave. And I'm just getting, as I'm getting this out of the bag, breaking it up a little bit, because if you've got a great big chunk of mince and you just sort of throw it into the pan, it tends to not cook very evenly, and you've got the problem of trying to break it up with a wooden spoon or a spatula or a fork or something. So I just do that with my fingers as I'm getting it out. And as I say, because we didn't let the pan get too hot before we started to do this, it makes it a little bit easier. And you'll probably hear that it's starting to sizzle quite happily now. And there we go, that's our mince in the pan. Give my hands a bit of a wash again. Sometimes I actually leave the tap just dribbling a little bit for that, because you tend to wash your hands a few times when you're cooking, just so that you can feel what you're doing and you don't cover everything in bits of mince and chopped up onion and whatever else you're using. We'll give this a bit of a stir, just to sort of spread the mince evenly around the pan and mix the onion in with it. And one of the things when you're cooking mince is you do need to sort of keep things moving a little bit, otherwise you'll tend to get bits of onion and mince catch on the bottom of the pan. So just move it around with a wooden spoon, scoop bits up and tip it back into the pan. You don't need to do anything fancy when it comes to stirring, just as long as you sort of keep the whole thing moving, you should be pretty confident of getting things cooked fairly evenly. Couple of things that I'm going to add now to that, just to give it a bit more flavour. If I can find the right jar, which that one wasn't. First thing we're going to put in is a little bit of crushed garlic. You can use fresh garlic, of course, if you're inspired enough to chop it up, but we tend to just use this crushed garlic and keep it in the fridge and just put a teaspoonful in. And I really like the smell of onion and garlic cooking together, and it puts a nice flavour through the meat. If you don't have it, as I said, don't get too hung up about it. It really doesn't matter. The other optional extra, and I won't put any in on this occasion, but you can put a little bit of ginger in to give it a little bit of flavour. So I'll just mix that garlic through a little bit. Otherwise we'll have one patch of the dish that tastes of nothing but garlic, and you'll never know it was even there. So we'll try and mix that through a bit. There we go. Now the other thing we'll put in is a little bit of soy sauce and a little bit of Worcestershire sauce. You don't want to get too scientific about the amounts. I certainly don't. Pour a little bit of each in, and again it just kind of blends in and gives it a nice flavour. Okay, that's the soy sauce in. And a bit of Worcestershire as well. There we are. Hello.
Baba just wants to
say night-night. Okay, night-night, Jade. Sleep well, darling. Daddy loves you. See you in the morning. Night-night. Okay. Now, the other thing that I often put in to dishes like this, if I've got some, and we happen to have some today, is a little bit of white wine. I'm just using fairly cheap cask wine. Again, just sort of softens the meat a little bit, and mixes it it makes it easier to mix through. Now it's very important, of course, that you test the wine to make sure that it's not off. So half a glass for you and half a glass for the dish. Probably not quite half a glass, it's probably only a mouthful, if you like, there. But just all kind of blends in nicely and gives it a nice flavour. If you don't have that and you're finding that the mince is a little bit difficult to break up, you can just as easily add a quarter of a cup or so of water, maybe a little bit less. And certainly you shouldn't notice an enormous difference in terms of how it all tastes. The wine's just a nice little extra if you've got it. So what we'll do now is just kind of stir all this through, keep it moving. In a couple of minutes we'll add a few more things. The main thing that we're doing here is just browning the mince. If you're a little bit wary of hot pans and the like, and I know I was when I first started cooking, you can use oven mitts or oven gloves, which are the silicon type gloves. I tend to find though that they tend to be more of a hindrance than a help in most cases. So I just try and make sure that I orient the pan in such a way that I can always find the handle fairly easily, and from that you can sort of tell where the rest of it is without burning yourself, and you don't need to touch the metal part of the pan. Again, that's one of those things that you probably really have to find your own method of dealing with, just based on what type of stove you have and what happens to work for you, and how confident you are with these sorts of things. The good thing about anything that you cook in a pan, of course, is that you can usually hear it. This isn't sizzling particularly loudly because we have got a little bit of liquid in here with the soy sauce and the wine and so on. So I don't even know if the microphone will pick it up, but it's certainly making enough noise that if you're in the room you'll find it and know where it is before you burn yourself. And we've got the stove up high enough that you should feel the heat coming off it long before you touch anything hot as well. Still just stirring this around. What I usually add at this point is a good shake of ground cumin. That's kind of optional as well. Really just depends if you happen to like that sort of thing. I just think it makes it smell really good when it's cooking, and it does give it a little bit more of a spicy Mexican kind of a flavour. But yeah, it's really optional. If you don't have it, I certainly wouldn't go out of your way to go and get some just for this dish. Now the mince is starting to cook nicely. We probably only need to give that a couple more minutes as it is. If you do overcook this a little bit, it really doesn't matter. As long as you've kept it moving, you know, it won't dry out or anything like that. And you're always better to overcook slightly than undercook. Otherwise you can end up with a fairly nasty case of salmonella on your hands. And if you're cooking for somebody else, or you're having people over for dinner, it certainly could spoil future parties and dinner invitations and put a bit of a strain on the friendship. So yeah, it's always a good idea to overcook slightly. I know it's sometimes a little bit difficult to tell. I normally, for something like this, would work on about 10 or 15 minutes. But that really depends on how hot your stove is and how hot you're comfortable running it and so on. I also often will taste a little bit of the meat as I'm cooking it, and that should give you a fair idea of whether it's cooked or not. And also whether you need to add anything or whether you've forgotten anything. So I always like to do that. Some people may not be comfortable with that, but that's just the way I do it. cases. Looking pretty good now. Smelling pretty good as well. Just move it around a little bit more. Okay, now we'll leave that for a moment, and the next thing that we need to add to this is a can of tomatoes and a can of red kidney beans. Now, I'm pretty fortunate here in that both of these happen to be ring pull type cans, which makes things easier. So I'll put the tomatoes in first. These ones are crushed tomatoes. You can use fresh tomato if you've got them and if you can be bothered to chop them up. But I tend to use the canned ones, and often you can get them with a bit of basil or onion or that sort of thing mixed in, and they tend to taste pretty good. I'll throw that in the rubbish. Give the tomatoes a bit of a mix through, and I don't know if you can hear or not, but because of the liquid in the tomatoes, the sound of it will be more like a water boiling, I suppose, now than an actual sizzling sound. So we'll just give that a bit of a mix around. Okay, now for the beans. Now, red kidney beans, certainly the way they come in this country, and I presume it's the same the world over. If it's not, please feel free to enlighten me. But they have a preservative in them. And I'll just shift that onion peeling and the knife out of the sink before we go any further. I should have cleaned that up, but I got carried away talking. Not concentrating on what I was doing. Oh well, no big problem. Knife in the dishwasher. There we are. Okay, now as I was saying, red kidney beans have a preservative in them which really isn't good for human consumption. So what I've got here is just a plastic colander. We'll open the can of beans. And tip them into the colander, and we'll run some cold water on them for a few seconds just to wash out any of the or drain away the preservative. So we'll leave that running while we throw this can in the bin and give the pan a bit of a stir so that we don't boil anything over. Go. Now I'm just going to turn this down to 4 because we're not going to be able to move it around now for a little while, or in a minute anyway. Turn that water off now and we'll tip the beans in. Here we go. Drop the colander back in the sink. And we'll just mix the beans through the rest of the dish with our wooden spoon again. And because we turned that down, the bubbling's starting to slow down a little bit, which is good because, as I say, the next bit will be away from the pan for a couple of minutes. Okay, now's the bit where we cheat slightly, and if you're a real properly trained chef and whatnot, you probably wouldn't do it this way. but I'm going to. And what we're going to do here is use a packet of chili con carne sauce mix. I'm not proud I'll use that rather than making my own. These are available from your standard supermarket and with all the other packet sauces that you can buy these days, and they're not bad. You could also use a taco sauce mix because they're, well, from what I can tell anyway, they smell pretty similar. This is just a packet of, it's like a, comes in a powder. So we're just going to rip the top off the packet. If I can do it without making a mess and spilling powder everywhere, which it looks like I've managed to do. Good. And we'll tip that into our Pyrex jug. You can use really anything to mix this up. I just find the jug is the most convenient. And we're going to add a cup of water to that. Just using a fairly standard measuring cup, which are always handy to have close to hand. Okay, tip that into the jug and we'll give it a good mix around with a spoon. You'll feel when you first start stirring it that it'll be lumpy, a bit like instant gravy if you've ever made that sort of thing. You really do need to get as much of the powder dissolved as possible. You can speed the process up a little bit by using warm water or boiling water if you're confident with that. I didn't in this case, really only because I forgot to boil the kettle and I didn't want to bore you all with me talking for 5 minutes while we waited for it to boil. So we're using just ordinary cold water here. And we'll give it a bit of a, it just means you've got to mix it a little bit more. But that's not really a problem. Now, I generally just sort of have a bit of a feel to see how much powder is left, and there are still a few bits of partly dissolved powder there, so we'll stir it a little bit more. Okay, that's pretty much done. So we'll pour that into the pan now. And you'll hear that the sound has changed a bit there again. Jug away. Wash the fingers again so that we don't spread chili powder all over the kitchen. And we'll give this a bit of a mix. And it should, it'll thicken up a little bit as you mix it through. But obviously the main thing is to sort of distribute the sauce mix throughout the whole dish. As I said, you do need to turn the pan down more or less when we did. Otherwise you'll find it'll start boiling straight away. And now that we've got a fair bit of liquid in the pan, there is a risk that it could start boiling over and making a mess all over your stove. So it's a good idea to turn it down to sort of somewhere between a half and two-thirds at this stage, because everything's basically cooked. We're just sort of simmering it now and allowing the sauce to thicken and so on. And that's basically it done. I'll come back to it in just a moment. I've just had a taste there and it tastes pretty good to me. Hopefully Sharon will think the same when she gets around to eating it. Now the other thing we're going to do with this dish is some rice. You can serve it with corn chips and guacamole, mash up an avocado and an onion, a little bit of crushed garlic, and mix all that together. A little bit of lemon juice, have some avocado guacamole with it. Or just have corn chips to dip in, but I'm just going to do rice with it today. I won't bore you with the whole process of cooking the rice, but there is a little trick that I'd like to share with you for this, just because it makes things a bit easier. Now, those of you that have done cooking before, pouring things like rice and boiling water into measuring cups and then trying to pour it into a rice cooker or a dish or a saucepan isn't a lot of fun, because the measuring cups are generally pretty small. So one trick that Sharon came up with for me with this is you hook the measuring cup, the handle of the measuring cup, over the rim of the rice cooker with the cup actually sort of hanging inside the rice cooker. The rice cooker is just really a plastic, I guess like a big plastic saucepan that you can put in the microwave. So we're going to pour the rice in now, and you'll hear the sound that it makes as it's going into the cup, and you'll hear it change as I overflow the cup into the container, and that's how we know it's full. Okay, that's it hitting the bottom of the rice cooker. So we'll unhook the cup now and tip the rest of it in, and we can do that without getting our fingers anywhere near the contents. And we're going to use the same method for the hot water. You could probably do it just with cold water, but it tends to soften the rice and cook better if you use hot water for this. Now for us, we use 1 cup of rice to 2 cups of boiling water. And I should have put the kettle on, because now of course we are going to have to wait for that to heat up a little bit, but I probably won't let it boil completely. We'll just try and get it fairly hot, and while we're doing that we'll give the chili another stir, and we can probably turn the element down now to about 1/4. Because everything should be nicely mixed through, and the mixture should have started to thicken. So all we're really doing now is keeping it warm and getting the flavour through everything while the rice cooks. But yeah, so you can do the same thing with the boiling water. So you hang your cup over the edge of the rice cooker, pour your water into the cup. Once the cup sort of overflows, you'll hear it hit the rice in the bottom of the container, and then just unhook it and sort of unhook the handle of the cup, tip it up, and pour it in, and you can, as I say, you can do that while keeping your fingers out of the way of the boiling water. That is more or less it. I'll be giving the rice basically 3 minutes in the microwave, give it a stir, give it another 3 minutes. Give it a stir and give it another 3 minutes, and then serve it. And while that's happening, I'm just going to clean up the kitchen a little bit, so we won't bother recording all of that, because that's all the useful information and the useful stuff we've basically covered. I hope that this has been useful, and that there's a few tricks here that you might have picked up. If you've got any comments or any little tricks you'd like to add, or if you've got any good recipe ideas for me, I'd appreciate those. The best way to contact us is at castaway@database, that's DADABASE.net. And our webpage of course is www.castaway.database.net. And there's a link there to our podcast feed if you want to subscribe to that directly. Although I hope to be making some more submissions for Blind Cool Tech as well. So hopefully Larry and I will be able to share a little bit of content. For anyone who didn't get our test podcast, and I wouldn't blame you if you ignored that one, just to fill you in on the sort of things that we're going to be covering in the future, I'm going to do a few more dishes and hopefully try and share a few more tips and tricks with you, and a few more gadgets and so on. Also going to be talking a lot about motorhomes. Sharon and I and Jade have an old 1981 Toyota Coaster bus, which was originally about a 25-seater bus. It's been converted into a motorhome, and we like to go away on holidays in that fairly regularly, so we're going to take you with us on a few soundseeing tours and also talk a little bit about the vehicle itself. We're going to play Grease Monkeys at some stage and give the vehicle a service, and I'll podcast that for anyone who feels like learning how to do an oil change. If you've got a partner or a daughter with a or a son with a car and you'd like to be able to service it for them, or they'd like you to be able to service it for them and save them some money, so we'll talk about that. We'll also be talking about mobile communications equipment, camping fridges, camping stoves. We'll do some outdoor cooking, and really anything else that we can think of around that area that I think may be of interest to people. Again, if you've got any ideas or you've got any comments, good, bad or ugly, about those ideas or about what you've heard tonight, please drop me an email. I don't have a comment line at this stage, so the email's really the best alternative. And I hope that if you try this recipe, you enjoy it, and that you have some fun cooking with it. And if you didn't, don't worry. And just, I guess, to serve as a reminder that cooking is supposed to be fun and that we shouldn't get hung up about it. If you want to know how to have a complete disaster in the kitchen, have a listen to this. Here's Fred Dagg to tell us exactly how not to do it. We'll catch you next time. Bye for now.
G'day. There are quite a lot of cooking programs floating about the place these days, and I thought I might perhaps have a crack at doing one. Not that I'm a very good cook, but from what I hear of these other guys, neither are they. And they seem to cook a lot of things like light-boiled Turkish gonads in sauce tatar flambé en croûte, which is really no use to people like me who want something along the lines of bacon of egg herbs. So the other day while I was knocking up the brekkie, I took a few notes, and if anyone's interested in my type of food, this is how you do it. You turn the element on high, drop a pan on her and go and find the eggs. You stick two hunks of bread in the toaster and heave a bit of fat in the pan. If you've left the pan on high for a while, you'll find you've got a reasonable sort of fire on your hands, and this can be easily put out by grabbing the pan with the sleeve of the jersey and biffing it outside for an hour or so to cool down. You get another pan, fill it up with fat, and drop a few eggs in, remembering to break the outer covering or shell of the egg by cracking it against the pan or the stove or your head or something fairly hard. By this time, the toaster should be swathed in a deep cloud of black smoke, so you unplug that and put it outside with the first pan and put some new toast in the oven on grill. Now you get the bacon and drop it in with the eggs while you clean the walls down where all the fat stuck to them after your first effort. And by keeping a close eye on the toast in the oven, you should find that the back of your neck's been covered with little bits of bacon and fat, which will be hot enough to make you stand up and see that the bacon has shrunk to about a quarter of its normal size, and the eggs have been cemented to the bottom of the pan by a kind of bubbly black glue that goes very hard and tastes quite classy, matter of fact, if drowned with tomato sauce. By now, the toast should be good and black, and your good kiwi brekkie is ready to eat. And I'll give you another recipe if I ever learn to cook anything else.